This is Whitney, and you're listening to the JCast on Jabberlog.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with Jabberlog on the JCast, and this is going to be episode 17 for Within the Trenches, and this is just part of a series of episodes that I've been doing. I've had the privilege to be here with like-minded individuals here in sunny Boca Raton, Florida, and I'm here for the Mini-C Conference. And currently, we are within the Police Fire Communication Center, and for this final episode here, I am sitting with a dispatch academy with some students here, and I've got Wayne. How's it going?
Great.
I've got Lisa. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Murnette.
Hi.
And Kimberly.
What's going on?
Nothing much. Now, today, you guys have been taking the active shooter class, correct?
Yes.
That's correct.
Now, is this part of some sort of credit for this academy, or how exactly does that work?
Yes, the credits for the class, we actually have to take, I think it's 240 hours that we have to have. So it's a 4-month class, and this is one of the classes that through the academy that this was our all-day class to come and sit here. Now, there are classes going on all week that any of us could have signed up to attend anything we wanted, but they thought that this class was so important that they put it in a part of our curriculum. So it's the day that we all have to spend here.
It's mandatory.
Oh, yeah?
Mandatory class.
Mm-hmm. Does this go towards a specific certification or anything?
Yes,
or?
For the state of Florida, the new certification for public safety telecommunicators that was enacted into law. However, it applies to really no matter what jurisdiction you would be in the country, because the active shooter scenario is such a big news these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've taken a few active shooter classes, and listening to the calls, they're amazing, you know, and I don't mean like amazing, like really good. I mean, it's something that you would never think you would hear. You know, and you're listening to the dispatchers take these calls, and they sound so calm and everything. But me taking a few of those calls, I know inside I'm freaking out.
They're calm on the outside, but
yeah,
not on the
exactly
inside.
Right. Because that's what our job is. You know, to be that person that I've always said that in the moment of crisis, we are the voices of authority, and that's how we are. But you know, people don't know. You know, we're not just drones. You know, we're not just taking that call and just doing our job. We're right there with you. You know, we're going through this whole thing. So yeah, I can just imagine. You know, you guys, you know, listening to these calls. I mean, what have you been thinking? You know, some of the calls that you've heard.
I was thinking today a lot about my experience as an educator from the other side of the fence, how it is to have to be responsible for a group of people and get them to safety as quickly as possible. So I think that's actually going to help me as a dispatcher.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm.
Another thing that we were taught today was how as dispatchers, we focus on the event at the time and we think about it later.
Afterwards, yes.
I think it's a necessary thing. I think really all dispatchers were kind of like inside out hurricanes. Like inside, you have all these things that could be going on, these things that you're thinking about, and you know that you can't let any of that affect what comes out of your mouth on the radio. I don't know if it's just something that's inherent for dispatchers that you kind of clear everything else off of the board, and the only thing you're thinking about is this one phone call and how to get that right.
Yes, it's like you know that right now I have to deal with this. I can cry later and do whatever you need to do later on.
Yeah.
But at this moment, I have to help this person. I have to save this person.
Keep it together.
So. Yeah, exactly. I've definitely had those moments where I've taken calls, and as soon as I get off the call, you know, as long as I'm able to, you know, as long as it's not busy or anything else, I can say, okay, team, I'm going to step out for just a minute. Yeah, that was nuts. You know, I didn't think that was going
to
happen.
That. You have to do that so that you can take the next call and be effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even as a student sitting in, because we've been able to sit at several comm centers, all of us, and just sitting there and listening to some of the more intense calls, high risk calls, you're just sitting there and like, oh my gosh, you like stop breathing for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, it's
it can, it can definitely get intense. And one of the past episodes, my co-host and I, we did an episode where it was just her and I, we didn't have anybody we were interviewing, and we were playing 911 tapes. Now, I don't know if you guys have ever checked it out, but there's a website called Dispatch Magazine Online, and they have a library full of 911 tapes that you can go on there and listen to. And Gary Allen, who's the editor of that publication, I actually made contact with him to kind of spread, help me spread the word on this show that I was trying to do. And he helped me out. And actually, if it wasn't for his article, I don't think I would have made the goal that I was trying to make, because I was trying to raise money to get the equipment to do this show. And from there, I ended up asking him, you know, can I have your permission to use some of these tapes? So we were playing those tapes. Now, for that one episode, we started out playing like the funnier tapes, the more lighthearted tapes. But you know, we're going to get into playing those intense tapes as well. I mean, these are all FOIA'd, and I'm sure they've talked to you guys about that whole process.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, those calls will be played. And it's not to scare anybody or anything. It's to let them know that this is what we go through.
Yes.
You know, we, these calls really do happen. You know, it's not just on TV.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Yeah. So how did each one of you, if you can tell me a little bit, how did you get into, I guess what pushed you towards dispatch or emergency services wanting to get into it?
Well, for me, I actually worked for the city of Boca Raton in dispatch about 8 years ago. And so I'm back now. Mm-hmm. I really do like the hours. And I know everybody says, like, you know, midnights are crazy and the people that are on midnights, like they're even crazier.
Oh, yeah.
But some of us do like to get our, you know, whatever errands you have to do in the morning. We like to get that kind of stuff done.
Right.
I think the thing that mainly brought me back to dispatch when I started to look around, I wasn't run off from dispatch. I left because I wanted different hours at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that it was good, that I was good at, and it was something that I knew that I could do well. So it wasn't anything that I wanted to try to shy away from. Mm-hmm. But I will say that when I'm sitting on calls now and you hear that person on the other end of the line screening, it takes a second sometimes for you to say, it's time to do something. Like it's time for you to kick in, because a lot of times when you hear people scream or you hear a loud noise, the first thing you do is want to retreat into yourself and try, you know, you get afraid and you're trying to figure out what's going on. But in that moment that you have to stand up and say, what is the nature of your emergency? Tell me what it is you need.
Right.
The being able to tell myself, I did that once before and I can do that again. And they always tell us in class, don't second guess yourself. If you know that you can do something, then do it. So that's why I'm here.
That's good. Yes. Yeah.
Well, for me, to be honest, I'm not a dispatcher yet. Mm-hmm. I'm still a student, but I feel like I'm a dispatcher.
Yeah.
I have seen so much. I've learned so much. And going into this, I didn't know what I was doing because I was encouraged by somebody.
Uh-huh.
And just what I've learned from the classes, you know, going to St. Mary's Hospital, to Trauma Hawk, to, you know, Boca Police and all these other places that we've been, plus the classroom, I have learned so much and seen so much. I just know that this is something that I want to do and this is something that I'm going to enjoy doing.
Oh, so. Yes, I'm sure you will too. Like us, enjoying it completely. Yes.
Well, I have a background in psychology and special education, so I've had to do a lot of troubleshooting on the spot, had to remain calm, a lot of agitated adults and children and situations that were really tough. People were coming at me violently, and I loved my job, but I found that instead of doing the day-to-day, I liked the putting out fires part of it the best, so I'm taking all of that and bringing it with me to dispatching.
That's great.
Being a dispatcher for me allows me, in a sense, to give back to my community and serve the public, something that has always interested me. Here in South Florida, Palm Beach State College's new dispatch program has provided the avenue for me to explore everything that's involved in being a dispatcher. It's been a great, great program, and I'm glad to be a student in it currently.
Awesome. I was just thinking, out of the calls that you guys have listened to, have you guys heard the calls where there's a lot of angry people, like, you know, how about drunks?
Yes.
People that are intoxicated calling in.
Sleeping on the bench at Publix.
Right.
You know,
so what did you think about those calls? Did you stop and think for a moment, okay, how am I going to deal with somebody who's calling in, who's immediately upset with me or is intoxicated? And although it seems funny and you want to chuckle, you can't. Of course, you can lift the phone or the headset and kind of laugh to yourself. But what have your thoughts been?
One of my thoughts has been how difficult it can be to get the necessary information, just the protocol of where, what, when, and weapons and so on out of the caller in those situations. Oftentimes, precious seconds and minutes can be used up just trying to get a location or a phone number. And those difficulties are magnified when the caller is inebriated and so on.
Yes. I always think when I'm sitting in at dispatch centers, you have to get it right.
Right.
You can't make mistakes, because one little mistake can, you know, escalate the whole situation.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's what I always keep in mind.
I was surprised when I started listening in how many people call in for things that are not emergencies that still must be taken seriously.
Yes.
I always had the fear of God in me about accidentally dialing 911 before I was exposed to this. And it amazes
realized
me
how many
people
call.
Aren't worried at all about calling 911 for whatever they want to.
Directions and stuff.
And I don't think the general public realizes how busy we are answering calls like that as well.
I also, to piggyback off of what Lisa's saying, how, you know, you had the fear of God about, you know, misdialing 911 by mistake. And I feel like now people dial 911, and because there are so many different crime shows out there now, like CSIs, and you have, you know, all these different type of cop shows, that because that's the way they've seen it on TV, I think what it is that they expect to have happen when they pick up 911, it is so far from what we actually are able to do for them that you want to take a step back and say, hey, this isn't TV, and that's not how that works.
Like,
I really wish they had some type of addendum that would, I don't know, just one day on the news, if somebody could say that the person who's asking you questions on the phone is not the person that's dispatching the police. So telling me, hey, can you just send somebody? I am not hindering the police coming to you in any way.
Oh, yeah.
Let me show you how this works.
Definitely.
And then, trying to get across to people why you have to ask them the certain questions that you have to ask them. Mm-hmm. When you say, you know, what's the nature of your emergency, and people automatically launch into what's wrong, and the first thing you need to know is, tell me where you are.
Right.
If your house is burning down and then your phone disconnects, well, thank you for telling me your house is burning down, but I have no idea where you are.
There was this lady who used to call, and she hasn't done it since, mostly because it was she got to a point where it was misuse of 911. And for anybody who doesn't know, if you misuse 911, you can go to jail for that.
Yes. Right.
And this specific person, it got to that point. But in the beginning, she would call and I would say, Allegan 911, where's your emergency? And I would hear, just get them over here now, and click. Mm. She had a landline. So she knew, because she had done it enough times, that address would be there and I have to send somebody. So as soon as we put in that address and put unknown situation, the officers knew right away who that was. But, you know, and people don't understand that we get those calls. And yeah, it's great when it's a landline, but when you're dealing with a cell phone, where are you going to find them? Unless they have a phase two, you know, and you go off their coordinates for the GPS. But even then, you know, they could be, if they're on a corner or something, they still have to go and search the area for them. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, anybody listening, please stay on the line and tell us.
Right.
Exactly. Yes.
And, you know, as a teacher, I think like a teacher still, and I wonder why we don't go into schools and help kids know what to say if they were ever on the phone and had to call 911, because no one ever told me when I was growing up.
Yep. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate a show like this, because before I started going to this academy, I thought 911, I had no idea that it was this intense. You know, I mean, I thought you just call 911 and they just send somebody.
Right.
I didn't understand anything about what you had to do. So I can understand when people call in sometimes, they really don't know the amount of work and the things that the dispatchers have to go through.
Right.
You know, so.
It's certainly a technical field now with the latest generation CADs and so on. Mm-hmm. This is not just a job anymore. It's become a professional career.
Right.
Right.
More and more states are requiring certification and training. Shows like this are great as a resource for people that are interested in dispatching, and for existing dispatchers. Mm-hmm. Just being on Within the Trenches with the infamous Ricardo is such an honor because of the tremendous resources provides for us to share information and help understand this increasingly complex career that the dispatchers are involved in.
Yeah, and it's great for it just to people to hear these stories, you know, what you guys are saying, especially coming, you know, from, you know, academy and everything from that sense, it's good for people to listen to it and learn more. Mm-hmm. Now you were saying that, Marnette, that you didn't know anything about 911 at all or how intense it was. So when you first walked into a dispatch center, what was that like for you?
I was a little overwhelmed, but yeah? I was excited as well. I thought they just answered a phone, to mm-hmm. be honest. You know, I walked in and I saw computers everywhere.
50 screens.
You know, one person sitting in front of all these screens and they're answering the phone and they're getting the radio and they're doing this. You know, it was very exciting, but very complex.
I didn't realize that there were call taker positions and then dispatcher positions.
Yeah,
I really didn't realize all of that in busy
supervisors and managers, and I had no idea.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that there are some dispatchers who they'll say, no, I'm not a dispatcher, I'm a call taker. Like, oh, okay, I apologize. Or a
telecommunicator.
Yeah, or I'm a 911 operator, specialist. Like, we're all the same thing, aren't we?
Right. Different names, same thing.
It's funny. It's funny to hear that, you know, people say stuff.
That's like a bartender saying, I'm a mixologist.
Oh, well, there you go.
They work the bar.
I know, right?
Right, yeah. So can you think of any calls that you've heard so far, either within the academy or today in your active shooter class that really made you think about, I guess, what you would do?
What about that that one with the lady who...
Like, what kind of calls have you guys heard so far within this?
Well, this one was not something we heard in our class, but mm-hmm. this was general. The lady, the nurse who refused to help the patient.
Oh, yeah.
There was a recent one because of protocols in her agency.
Yeah, how did you guys... talk about that within a class of yours?
We did, yes.
Okay, so what did you guys think of that? Because that was actually something that my co-host and I did. We played it. And we were going to air it and kind of talk about it. But then, you know, after we listened to it, we thought, maybe we're going to hold off on it first.
I believe this is the Bakersfield, California incident.
Yep, this will be that one.
Yes. I think in our brief discussions in our class, we all agreed that it runs antithetical to who we are in public service to withhold medical treatment mm-hmm. from a person in need. And that I believe... it became almost a moral issue that needs to be answered by society in those situations.
Yeah. It's because that was for people who don't know, or just weren't listening to the news. the call that we're talking about, Bakersfield, California, it was a few weeks ago, I believe. And there was a patient within, I don't know if it was an AFC home or something like that.
Yeah.
And so they call 911 and, you know, of course they're asking for help for ambulance or whichever. And the dispatcher is telling them just going through, you know, the amount of breaths that they're going, they're taking
EMD.
Within, I think it's like, 10 seconds, mm-hmm. the EMD, the emergency medical dispatch is what we use our cards to prioritize calls. And
the caller was a nurse at the facility refusing to give the protocol.
And it was apparent that they needed CPR. You know, they needed to start CPR.
Right.
And the dispatcher was trying to get somebody to do anything.
Anybody
from the street to come and do it. And the nurse kept saying, no, we can't do it.
It's against our rules. So
I was just struck by it in class. I didn't even realize that if you were at that type of facility, you were paying for this care. I did not realize that they could refuse you such a thing.
I was just shocked.
I was like, what do you mean? You're not going, isn't this your job?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is what you get paid to do. I couldn't fathom it. I couldn't understand what policy or what procedure you guys have in place that this is the rule now and that you would say that out loud. I couldn't understand.
So how did that make you feel?
I was beside myself. I couldn't imagine myself being someone that if I felt like I was having a heart attack or a stroke or something, and I'm looking at a healthcare professional and I mm-hmm. can hear them tell me, I'm not going to help you. I can't even begin to imagine how helpless you have to feel, how hopeless this situation has to feel. And there's a part of you that says, I'm paying to be here. You care for me on a regular basis. So you're not looking up into the face of a stranger. This is somebody who mm-hmm. changes your sheets. They feed you your meals, but you're sitting here in distress of some kind. And they're saying, I will not do it.
So then through the eyes of a dispatcher, then
I mean, thought the dispatcher, if I may, in that case, Ricardo, she just was relentless in trying to get
the
help.
Yeah, she did a great job.
She just receives all the kudos in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, we take these calls and we're helpless in a sense because there's nothing we can do, you know, and you get that feeling when you take a call like that and it bites, you know, mm-hmm. but what can you do? It's the nature of the beast.
And then on the other end of the spectrum, we heard a sample call in our class mm-hmm. of a lady who called in and in a frantic tone advised that she just ran over a toad. And although it's quite comical at first, the tone in her voice, it was very important to her.
She was broken about it.
And so as a dispatcher, to be cognizant of that, empathize with her situation. Right. And although we couldn't respond to her request of, can't you send a vet? It was still a member of the public that we serve and that we handled with dignity.
Right.
Well, yeah. The frog call aside, the one thing that I took away from last night's class was that the sooner you can let people know that help is on the way and you're just mm-hmm. getting a little bit more information, the better, because the general public has the sense that if we're still asking them questions, we haven't even let anybody mm-hmm. know that there's a problem yet. Yep. And I can understand that.
Good
you know,
point.
It's not their job to know everything that we know.
No.
So
right.
we got to get the message out there that, you know, I'm here to try to help you and help is on the way.
Exactly. And that's definitely what I hope to, you know, my co-host and I, that we hope to do, you know, with this show so that mm-hmm. people can understand more. But, you know, it's to build up or to add on your call about, you know, the toad and everything, you know, sometimes with those calls, we get so involved with them that sometimes the call can turn to something completely different. And I don't remember if I've talked about this before in a previous episode, but I took a call once. It was a domestic and the husband and wife, they were yelling at each other. They were pretty much separated. He was at the end of the driveway and she was at the house, but she was yelling loud enough that I could still hear her. Mm-hmm. And he was very upset. You know, I did everything I had to do, but he kept saying that his little girl was very upset. And I said, well, you know, just comfort her, you know, just let her know everything's going to be fine. And he was. And I could hear kind of like a crying in the background too. So, you know, I figured it was his daughter that was, you know, his little girl.
Right.
Well, it didn't turn out to be that way. I said, so how old is your daughter? And he says, what? And I said, your daughter, that you said your little girl is very upset. And he says, I don't have a daughter. I said, well, who's crying in the background? And he says, well, that's my dog. And I said, oh, you know, kind of moved the phone and laughed to myself.
Right.
I'm like, okay, well, this whole time I thought you were talking about your child. And he says, no, it's my dog. So staying involved there.
It's amazing.
I said, just comfort your dog and let.
Right.
Yeah. And he said, so this is, and I wasn't even thinking at the time because I was just going along with the call as if it was his kid. And I said, so this is not the first time that, you know, that she's been involved in this. And he says, no. And I said, well, just continue to comfort her. And
right.
Like, what do I do?
And you know? Can't mock the man.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know what? And the language, you know, we learned that early in our course that the language that people use,
you know,
is very important.
Yeah.
So somebody might say my dog and they mean my friend.
Exactly.
And how the picture we create in our mind mm-hmm. can change so quickly when mm-hmm. we realize we've interpreted something wrong. And we have to be able
to
adapt
wrap your brain
to that.
That's
right. Right. Well, it doesn't help that I have a coworker who's sitting next to me and was listening because I said, you need to listen to this. This sounds odd. You know, if you have a call like that, I don't know if they've told you this yet, but if you have a call that's just seems suspicious, just having someone else kind of listen to that call, they can pick up something
that's
else that
right.
you might not pick up.
Yeah.
Well, they happen to be listening to this when they realize that mm-hmm. this was not a child, it was a dog.
Yes.
And they're holding onto the phone and looking at me and laughing. I'm like, stop laughing.
Right.
I was like, that's not cool.
And the thing is, the person sitting next to you might know what that means. If someone used a slang or something, mm-hmm. and you could just ask. They
right.
might know and you don't know.
Right, so, exactly. Yeah. And one thing to remember is dealing with, I don't know if you heard any calls yet, but the moment that a dispatcher puts their foot in their mouth, that's always a hard one. And sticking on the topic of domestics, I took a call once where I'm talking to this little boy. Well, not a little boy. He was like a teenager, and he was fighting with his dad. And they were separated, but, you know, I kept him on the line until the officers got there. And I'm talking to him and everything. And I said, well, where's your dad now? Because I know you guys are in separate rooms, but where's your dad? Just so that I know, so I can put in the narrative so that the officers know. And he says, well, he's in the bedroom. I said, okay, well, where's your mom at? She died last month.
Oh, okay.
So then what do you say
after that?
And all I could say was, okay, I'm sorry. I didn't know. He's like, no, man, it's okay. It's cool. You didn't know. I was like, still, right. I feel like a jerk.
Right. And I'm sure that happens from time to time.
Yeah, definitely. There's those moments where you say something and you mean well.
Yeah.
And then, and on that, there's another tape. There was one that we played, and it was a dispatcher who, this lady was calling about her daughters, and she was saying that they were out of control. I think it was 10 and 13 and a half or something. And she wanted an officer to go out there to help her settle them down. And he says,
oh, I remember this.
Yeah. Yes. And he says, well, do you want us to go out there and shoot her? Mm. And she says, excuse me.
We heard that.
We played that, you know, and we chuckle about it because there's calls like that. Sometimes they come in where, what do you really want us to do?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I mean, I guess your opinions, any
it's
one
your
of
opinion.
You,
you just have to be careful. Those things don't get on record.
And in this day and age with a multicultural environment we live in, that you're going to encounter those types of things on a more frequent basis, I would think.
Misinterpretations.
That's correct. Yeah.
But I mean, honestly, what do they want us to do? You know, to send an officer out there to discipline their child, it's hard. I've always said, and I've said it in other episodes, I've always said, I will never deny someone to see an officer. Yes. If you need help, I will send somebody out there. But there are some people who, you know, they abuse the system.
Right.
And
right.
there's not a lot that an officer can do. They're not going to go out and discipline the child. So, you know, we were kind of talking about that in that call. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you guys going through the academy and everything, how would you have dealt with that, really?
Well, I've seen one too many kids that had trouble, you know, with restraining themselves, and parents had trouble knowing how to control them. So suppose that you just assume that it's a parent not doing their parenting job, but it's actually a child who has emotional needs.
Right.
And you don't send somebody, that's on you.
Oh, yeah. And we always send somebody else.
Yes, they taught us that you should dispatch every call because you just never know. You never know which one's going to be serious.
Yeah.
Also, what we've learned is the younger the child, the more innocent they are, so to speak. But then also with that comes the more communication issues are an issue also. We do want to respond with all we've got to children and those, the younger ones among us.
But I think in a situation like that, even the call that you took when you had asked him, you know, where's your mom? And he said that she just passed away. I would have felt like, oh my gosh, I just asked you that. But in my mind, I'm thinking I'm putting that in the call. You and your dad are having some type of, y'all are having a run-in of some kind today.
Right, yeah.
Perhaps this is an extension of why you guys are arguing today.
Right.
Then, even when the cop goes out there, then you're talking about it, then that we've learned other resources in class that perhaps you should go talk to a counselor. You know, have you and your dad had a discussion about this? You know, and again, if your mom just died a month ago, your wife died a month ago, I'm sure you're still grieving. You're probably not handling things the way you might otherwise. So knowing that information, although getting it the backhand way like that, you could provide some help later on.
So, yeah, no, that's a good point. You know, that's definitely something for the officer to use when he goes in there to say, you know, is this the reason,
Absolutely.
You know, this is going on? Because otherwise they might not even say anything.
That's right.
And they'll just, the officer will end up clearing and say, well, it's just a civil situation and I'm out of there. And we get another phone call after that. So how much time do you guys have left? I don't know if you said it at all yet, but in the academy, how much do you have left?
3.5 weeks.
We have 3.5 weeks.
3.5 weeks.
The course is 4 months long.
So you guys itching?
Already? A little bit.
We graduate a month from yesterday, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
May 2nd?
Yes.
That's when
we
graduate.
They're talking about our graduation already, although we have the final to take yet. And then, of course, the state exam. So
they're assuming
good performance on our parts.
So what is the final What's involved in the final test? I mean, is it all like common sense stuff that you guys listen or like went through, or?
A lot of it will be based on Florida's new curriculum issued by their Department of Health for the 911 public safety telecommunicator program.
Yes. It's going to include the history also, the history of 911, how it started.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Oh, the we don't
first
have
radio,
like
the first, you know, first radio and first call, stuff like that.
Nice.
A little bit of that.
As well as statutes for safety that we have to memorize.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. We have to know those.
See,
it's getting to be a complex profession now.
Apparently. Yeah. At least, you know, here in Florida, we don't have anything like that in Michigan, at least not yet.
Right.
But, you know, I started out working in Florida in a small town called Frostproof, which you've probably never heard of. But if you've heard of Lakeland, it's Lakeland, and then Frostproof is like right over here.
Oh, wow.
So literally smack in the middle of Florida. So yeah, I started out there, and my training, it was nothing like this. It was nothing like what you guys are doing. I myself had never done anything with 911. I had managed a few stores out of high school. So that's all I had was manager experience. And when I started there, the chief showed up and he just said, you know, if you still want the job, come in tonight. You start at 10 o'clock. Okay, well, I'll be there. So all I did, all my training was sitting next to another dispatcher who had been there for, I don't know how many years, but I would listen to him and I listened to a couple of calls and Ricardo, you're next.
Right.
What? Already?
Right.
I was like, that's it. You know, there's no protocols, nothing really that I have to go through. I'm like, well, you'll go through a 40-hour class, you know, next month or something, which I did. And I did learn a lot from that, but my initial training going in there that first night, that's what it was. Me sitting there, listen to a couple calls. It's your turn.
Wow.
Okay.
Scary.
Let me get something to wipe the sweat off. This is crazy. But no, that's good that you guys have the opportunity to take something, you know, like this, the academy that you're in, and to attend, you know, conferences like this. Because when I started out, we did not have that. So that is awesome that you guys do
at it. This conference today, we've had agencies come to our group and let them know of vacancies in their particular agency. They're looking for graduates of this course because it's a new state requirement. So it's neat to be able to mingle with these people.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah. And for them, it's a benefit because they get an employee that is familiar with the nature codes, some of the more common 10 codes, and all of the lingo associated with 911 as well. So I think it's a great course for us and for the agencies, for the employing agencies.
Yeah, I think the agencies are happy because before they would have to train us. Mm-hmm. Now we're going in with the training. So it's less
that
work
is good.
And
yes.
less, you know, expense for them.
Yeah. And then you know what you're getting into as well.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's good to have standards too, not only to protect the public, but to protect the responders.
Right.
If we're all doing the same thing, then it's more likely that we're watching their backs correctly.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Scene safety is a huge thing. So coming into the wrap up of this episode, is there anything, a type of message or anything that you guys would like to leave, each one of you, if you want, that you would like to leave for anyone who's looking to get into the academy that you guys are in right now, or just thinking of getting into dispatching as a whole?
Well, for me to say, first of all, I think it's a great profession to get into in the coming years. The sophistication that is now in dispatch agencies takes a lot of training, but the rewards of serving the public and the rewards for yourself are great indeed. And I encourage anyone who's interested in it to access programs like Within the Trenches and others to find out more about it.
I would say it's a fantastic way to learn about things from the other side of the fence, you know, like not just taking the call, but who receives it as far as, you know, hospitals and fire and rescue, learning all aspects and how we're connected.
Right.
Yeah, I would encourage anyone who love people and want to help people to do this. You know, previously I worked in similar situations, but I was always in contact with the person I'm helping. You know, if you feel like you want to help people, but you don't want to be directly in contact, you just want to be behind the scenes,
right.
This is an excellent way to do it. So anybody
true.
Who wants to be a dispatcher is an excellent way to help people and still be able to stay safe.
Right.
I would say for anyone getting into this field, it is a nice change to be in a facet of the job market where you're a commodity. Where we're sitting up yes. in that front room and there are people who are coming up to you saying, hey, I know you're in the academy. Here's my email address. Here's my phone number. We're hiring. Like, it is amazing to, for, especially for the people who have self-sponsored, to say themselves, you know what, this is something I'm interested in. This is something I want to do. And then to have this type of opportunity that you come to a mini-C and there are several agencies coming up to you saying, hey, we have jobs. We have opportunities.
Right, yeah.
Give us a call.
That's good.
It is a wonderful thing to be on the other side of a job fair and having people come to you
exactly.
say,
yeah.
I want you.
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
Because the norm is you going out
yes.
and looking for a job.
Beating
people actually
head.
Come to us and,
yep.
you know, take my email, take my card. Mm-hmm. We're looking to hire. It's
that's
a good,
awesome.
Very good feeling.
Plus, we get to rub elbows with Ricardo.
With the big wigs.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want that?
I know, right?
Well, thank you very much again for joining me for this episode. And like I said, this is going to be the wrap up here. So anybody who's listening to this, if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, anything, you can email me at thejcast@thejabberlog.com. You can follow me on Twitter @Jabberlog. And all of these episodes from this excellent experience I've had today will be posted on thejabberlog.com. Thank you very much once again.
Thank you.
You just listened to Within the Trenches on the JCast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to thejcast@thejabberlog.com.